Welcome to The Sound of Economics. My name is Guntram Wolf and I'm the director of Bruegel. And today I'm joined by Simone Tagliapietra to discuss the new European Commission tableau, which has been revealed yesterday by President-elect Ursula von der Leyen. And then zoom in on one portfolio in particular, which is the portfolio on the Green New Deal, which is sort of one of the big flagship projects of this new commission. But before talking about the Green New Deal more specifically, I would like to sort of have a short discussion about the overall setup of this commission. I mean, I think it has been quite an interesting revelation. I mean, first of all, this hasn't been leaked before, so it was really a masterpiece in terms of keeping the plan secret. I think a key feature of this plan is to have three so-called executive vice presidents. Those three executive vice presidents drive three key economic issues, really. Franz Timmermans will be not only the first vice president, but he will also drive the European Green New Deal. The second executive vice president will be Margrethe Vestager, Europe fit for the digital age. And last but not least, Valdis Dombrovskis, executive vice president for an economy that works for people. All three actually have not only a variety of commissioners with whom they will be working very closely to shape policy in that space, but they also have their own portfolio. And that's quite a change compared to the previous vice presidents, where basically the vice presidents did not have their own directorate generals and therefore had less grip on the machinery of the institution. So I expect those three to be actually quite instrumental in driving what I would call the political priorities of this commission. Then, of course, a number of other very important portfolios, the vice president for foreign, the high representative, that's already known, Josep Borrell, and a number of other key vice presidents. Perhaps one that got some coverage in the media was Margrethe Schinas, the former spokesperson, who's now commissioner for so-called protecting our European way of life, which I, frankly speaking, didn't like as a title. It was quite an ambiguous title with, I think, a lot of misunderstandings that resonate with this title. He will take care of migration issue, which is, of course, a big issue also in the coming years. So this is the broad constellation. But let me bring in Simone just for sort of a few initial remarks from your side. When you saw this overall tableau, what were your first impressions?
All in all, I think this structure is a very good one. The idea of providing the executive vice presidents with a dedicated service, so with DigiClimate for Mr. Timmermans and, of course, DigiCom for Mrs. Vestager, is a sensible step because, as you said, previously the vice president had a coordinating role of other commissioners. In this case, they are themselves commissioners. And this is really important to provide really substance to their action. I think that in terms of topics, the decision of having an executive vice president for the European Green Deal and an executive vice president for the digital age is really taking into consideration which are the really big challenges, but also the big opportunities that Europe faces in this historical moment. So it provides the right governance, the right framework to really have a consistent action in the field, in the economic fields, that can really lead the future of Europe in terms of growth and, of course, sustainability. Another remark that I would really like to make is the one considering the geographical scope of the vice president. So now, not talking about the executive vice presidents, but the all vice presidents, and the idea of having them spread out through Europe from north to south, from east to west, it's a really good one in terms of really showing the unity of the European Union and the consistent geographical action scope for this commission. Having said that, I think it is also remarkable the fact that we have young commissioners this time. We have one commissioner that is 20 years old, which also outlines a little bit a generational shift in the current structure, which is welcome. I also tend to agree with you that migration, being a defining issue of our time, having defined so much the European politics over the last years, would have deserved a far clearer clarification and nomination, let's say, in the structure. That choice of the protecting the European way of life is indeed, as a title, quite bizarre in my view. It would have deserved to be Vice President for Migration, but well, let's hope that substance will then redefine this.
Well, perhaps two more remarks from my side. I think one very interesting fact is, of course, that Margrethe Vestager continues to be the competition commissioner. I think that's a very clear political signal also that the European Commission is in charge of competition policy. It's not the member states that can, at their will, change the rules of the game. There is, of course, a mandate given to her to review the rules, and rightly so. I mean, there is a need to review competition rules, and in our memos we've been writing quite a bit about this. But I think the process should be driven by Brussels. That's at least the political signal that I read from this nomination. The other big point I wanted to make is that Ursula von der Leyen also mentioned quite prominently the fact that this is a geopolitical commission, which I thought was a strong statement and was also quite in line with a theme that we've been pushing with a few series of papers in the last months. Which is about Europe's place in the world, Europe's economic sovereignty. I think this will be a big topic. The Vice President and the High Representative, Josep Borrell, I think will be dealing quite a bit with this topic. We are faced with huge challenges from China, from Russia, from the US. Of course, the US approach looked quite transatlantic in the press conference, but I think also their realities might intrude, depending on, of course, on the election outcome. My very last remark, what I thought was actually very positive in the mission letters sent to all the commissioners, is actually that Ursula von der Leyen mentioned very strongly the issue of better regulation, better governance, evidence-based policymaking. I mean, this is a point that our colleagues Adrian Schout and Scott Marcus here at Bruegel have been writing about in a memo, which you can download on our webpage, in which they really emphasized what has been done so far in that space and what has also not been done in that space, trying to evaluate every legislative proposal that goes out there in the legislative process before it's being sent out in the legislative process, I think is very good practice. And it's important that that is stressed so prominently. And in a sense, I think our memos were foreseeing that trend and we're pushing that trend very rightly. But let's perhaps move on this overall first impression and move a little bit more into the issue of the Green New Deal, the European Green New Deal, as it's called now, or European Green Deal. There's not a new here. Of course, the original idea was Green New Deal, an allusion to Roosevelt's New Deal that was instrumental in reviving the U.S. economy at the time of the Great Depression. This here is now a European Green Deal, which clearly has a motivation to achieve very high climate targets in a quicker time than was previously foreseen. And I would say it's certainly one of the key projects going forward, a project that looks very ambitious, that has a lot of quite controversial issues subsumed in the mission and written, spelled out in the mission letter quite clearly. And a project that will be extremely transformative if it succeeds on not just some of our companies, but actually on our daily lives, daily way of living. And in our memos, if I can cite them one more time, we actually said at some stage that European citizens want you commissioned to deliver on climate, but they will dislike the consequences because they will dislike the impact it has on their daily lives. And so helping me to navigate this, Simone, let me turn to you. I mean, what were your first impressions when you saw the mission letter to Frans Timmermans? Is this a realistic program? Is it the right program? Where would you see the bus rolling?
Well, first of all, let me outline that the decision of having the executive vice president for the European Green Deal reflects a very right point, which is the fact that decarbonization is not a climate policy issue alone, is not an energy policy issue alone. What we are facing, it's really an economic transformation of Europe and is a transformation on the way our society lives. This is a full-fledged revolution, and the aim of achieving climate neutrality by 2050, which President von der Leyen says will also be written in a dedicated climate law that should be prepared by the Vice President Timmermans in the first 100 days. It's really the polar star of where Europe should be heading towards in the next years. To do this, we need all the sectors of our society to be on board. So again, it's not a matter of only producing energy with renewables, it's a matter of completely changing the way our transport sector is structured in Europe, the way we move, is about changing the way our industry is powered, changing the way in which our products are then produced, and also the change to change the way we live, because our buildings will need to go through, of course, a very deep transformation in order to achieve this climate neutrality. So the idea of having all these dimensions packaged under an executive vice president is a good one. I think the letter is reflecting what the president, of course, said previously at the European Parliament, as the big advantage of combining together the carbon pricing dimension and the strong emphasis that we can discuss afterwards on the carbon border tax, together with the dimension of the just transition. Once again, this transformation can only be successful if we not only move the system towards the direction of deep decarbonization, but at the same time also compensate the weakest sectors of the society that will be affected by this transition, because this is an important point. In the past, we have tend to overlook the fact that this transition might have actually impact some of the weakest sectors of our society, the low-income households, and this backfired massively, as we all saw in the street of Paris with the Gilets Jaunes. That was a really the sign that only by walking this pathway together with everybody in the society, we can have this delivered. This is reflected in this new structure. This is reflected in the political guidelines of this commission. And we need to see how, of course, this will be worked out, because frankly speaking, the distributional effects of climate policy and how to mitigate these and how to compensate the citizens that will be left behind. Think all just about the coal miners that will see their jobs vanishing in the next decades because of the phase out of coal and so on. Open brand new questions that to which we do not have necessarily today all the answers. So it's very important to have these at the top level of the commission. The level of ambition is already very high, because the president said clearly that in 100 days she wants to propose a clear European Green Deal. So this is going to be extremely challenging for Vice President Timmermans and his team. The dimensions are clear. We have carbon pricing, so we will have a reflection on how to not only enlarge the scope of the carbon pricing of in Europe, which only covers 50% of the emissions, but also how to bring into the global dimension through the carbon border tax. We will have a significant investment component. We need to provide to our industry also the investment capacity to innovate. So the Sustainable Investment Europe idea will be very important. And here, I think it will be particularly important, the discussion on what to make of the European Investment Bank. So the idea of turning part of the bank into a green bank will be key. We have the just transition, and then we will have the overall dimension of the industrial policy.
Well, let's zoom, if we have just a few more minutes, let's zoom in a little bit on these three, 4 points, but in a very concise way. I mean, I think it's very important that this is understood as a package. So there is the carbon pricing aspect with a very difficult issue of border carbon adjustment, which I think theoretically is quite widely appreciated, but often in practice, seen as a very difficult, and also in the real political life, in the realpolitik, it's going to be very difficult to do this, because partner countries very much will dislike border carbon taxes, such as has happened previously in the airline industry, when we tried to actually impose effectively impose on foreign airline companies that were flying from abroad to Europe to participate in the European emission trading system. So this is a very big issue, and I think there will be lots of political resistance. But it's one central pillar: the pricing of CO2 and other greenhouse gas emissions. The second issue is really the investment issue. And I think, Simone, you put it very well. This is about the companies, but it's also about much more broadly society. You cannot price transport expensively without having high-speed railway and adequate public transport. The third dimension is the distributional issue. I think you mentioned the coal miners. I think the coal miners, honestly speaking, are only a very small part of the whole thing. I mean, they're of course politically very organized, especially in some countries such as Poland, but also parts of Germany. But I think in the end, what is much more significant is the impact on much broader pockets of society, where citizens will feel the prices in their daily lives, and will want to see how they can be compensated. And last but not least, there's the industrial policy question. And I think this is really important from the point of view of understanding that the quicker we want to decarbonize, the more we will depend on beefing up and improving our technologies to do so, and to reduce the cost of the decarbonization. So this is really about shifting, if I can say so, the marginal cost curve, shifting the cost of decarbonization downward. And that's where we need industrial policy. And designing that industrial policy, I think we are really at the probably at the beginning of that story. And perhaps, Simona, you want to kick in on this last point and discuss a little bit the industrial policy point, and then we conclude.
Yeah, I would like to say something on this also in relation to what you said at the very beginning. The president yesterday during the press conference said clearly this is going to be a geopolitical commission. Now, let me say the following. Europe is only responsible for 10% of the global greenhouse gas emissions. It's clear that if we are serious about fighting climate change, we do not only need to put our own house in order and fostering the decarbonization of Europe itself, we need to export this transition. The way to do this is through the creation of better mechanisms to accompany also the private companies that in Europe want to make low carbon investments abroad. And this is also a big part of the discussion about what the European investment banks should become. Traditionally, the European Investment Bank has been used predominantly domestically. Now, the big issue is, do we want the European Investment Bank to really go global and make sure that, for example, European utilities or manufacturers that want to invest in renewable energy projects in Africa can have a substantial help in terms of guarantees to cover part of the country risk in these areas and so on. This is key. This is the clear example on how climate policy is and can be at the same time also industrial policy and foreign policy. Take the example of Africa. If we use the European Investment Bank to accompany low carbon investments into renewables there, that would be good for climate policy because it would help Europe to meet its carbon, its climate finance commitments assumed under the Paris Agreement. It would be a sensible tool of industrial policy because it would allow the fostering of European exports in rapidly growing markets, and it will really represent a very important foreign policy tool because, in the case of Africa, accompany 600 million people without access to electricity towards a future of development is certainly a sensible foreign policy action as well.
Well, I think we can debate, of course, for a long time whether the EIB is the best financing vehicle for this. But I think your point is a very, very well taken one, that the European climate agenda is an agenda that will have massive foreign policy implications also, and including in the developing world. And it's in the developing world where the opportunities for savings of additional CO2 emissions is actually the easiest to achieve from a cost perspective, at least. And so clearly this has to be thought of not just as a European project, but as a project that also extends to Africa. I'm afraid that's all the time we have for today. Thank you for listening to The Sound of Economics Director's Cut, in which we discussed the new European Commission Tableau de Bord, as well as the big highlight, the Green Deal. Thank you very much.